Greetings, and welcome to The Thirsty Mage, the podcast finishing up the summer with some guilty pleasures. I'm your host and court jester of Phantasma, David Lloyd, and in this week we share some of the titles that we've been playing for no reason other than just for the fun of it. The summer months are typically quieter than the rest of the year, so it's nice to get some games under our belts and finish a few of them that we've been just putting off for too long. The end of summer means the beginning of football for this Jets fan, and he's Casey Gibson.
Oh, and it actually maybe looks promising for once. I probably say that every 3, 4, or 5 years, however long the resets are, but this time it actually seems promising, so.
And that sounds us and the Maple Leafs up here. Yeah, every year, yeah. We're that much closer.
Well, yeah, I certainly don't have crazy thoughts of any real playoff hopes. That would be a real long shot. But it seems like we have a good quarterback, and like we're actually building for once instead of just like puttering at the bottom, you know. But I will save everyone the Madden 22 talk that I have been playing. Although they do have talent trees in Madden, so there's that.
Oh yeah, on your PS5, I guess, eh?
Yep. Yes, sir.
Cool. And taking advantage of the little free time that she has between review games, it's Paige Detlefsen.
I don't know if it was technically free time, but I took the time and I used it.
time is time. Yeah. It's coming from somewhere. Yep. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, before we get into the drinks and snacks discussion, I think I've just realized that I think it's been a few episodes since I've mentioned our Patreon, so thought I'd give it a little plug this week. So yeah, we still have our Thirsty Mage Patreon, which we have the number of tiers. So you got for $2 a month, you get the first tier, which gives you access to the regular episodes a week in advance, or sometimes even a little bit more than that. Plus, we still have the Auben Time podcast that's exclusive to Patreon subscribers, so that gets you access to that. And then we have a couple more tiers up that get you into our RPG club. So I know lately some people have been taking advantage of getting some of the new games, review games, out before they launch, so that they can get their opinions out into the stratosphere there. And so yeah, you get that extra benefit as well. So if you haven't already checked out our Patreon, maybe it's time to give it a quick peek before September, and we're going to be having the next vote for the topic for the next Auben Time. So make sure to check that out any time now. It's always a good time to hop into the Patreon. So
yeah, because you unlock all those back episodes too, right? So you know, just getting in that month,
like
you unlock them
7 or 8 now. Yeah, exactly. So. And yeah, it'd be fun getting back into those after we took a little bit of a break there in August to kind of reset and get all the vacations. Yeah, that's right. Sometimes it's a little hot doing a podcast in 40 degree weather, so we'll have to
tell that to Paige.
We're back in. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's too hot here and too cold there, so we all need to get a little bit closer.
There's never such thing as too cold, in my opinion.
Yes, there is. It's right now, it's too cold.
Yeah, my car's oil tank believes that too cold is -40. That was the temperature where it just spewed all over my driveway.
It had enough.
Yeah, it asked me what the hell I thought I was doing on a 40 degree weather by just barfing its guts all over my driveway. But What's not going to make us throw up is some of the drinks or snacks that we have this week. And Casey or Paige, you guys have anything that you want to discuss this week?
Yep. Well, while I was doing my research on foods that are Australian, I find some things every so often that I'm like, I can't believe that's not. Like, it's just Australian. but then I realize it's one critical detail. So you guys have jelly donuts, right? Mm-hmm. Jam donuts, as we'd call them.
Yep.
But do you have hot jam donuts?
I not that I'm aware of. I
only if it's a fresh donut.
I have not had one. Yeah.
No. So apparently they originate in my state, and it's basically, so they're similar to like the jelly donuts, but they have more yeast, and they are served very hot. Wikipedia says that they are served so warm that it is common for consumers to burn their tongue on the jam.
Oh, it's like pizza levels of heat.
And so sometimes they're just like made as they are, or they're made in like a fryer, so they're very, very nice and hot. And have some powdered sugar on them.
Because I have had a hot donut or a warm donut. Like, if you go to Krispy Kreme, you know, you get, like, the glazed warm donuts, and they're delicious. So I could imagine, like, a jam-filled donut that was hot would be, like, next level.
I'd say they may be a bit smaller than what I think, what like, a picture of a normal jelly donut looks like. But then that's
maybe, like, a donut hole, like a munchkin?
Maybe just, like, a little bit bigger, but yeah.
In between? It's, like, the adolescent.
Yeah,
version of the donut.
It's a second evolution. Yeah, but they're very delicious, and the idea that people don't have access to that is very sad.
Well, I'll give you my address. You can just mail some, and I'll reheat them.
Well, they're not going to be hot.
Hey, I was going to say, they might not be hot crossing the ocean.
3 weeks later, it's like, man, these are a little moldy.
Yeah, that's right. They'll have to have an oven on the boat. Well, those do sound good. This week I actually might do a Canadian dessert. I mentioned it last week because I've been going through the beer that I picked up from the brewery over the last couple weeks, and I've been drinking mostly kind of like, you know, for lack of a better term, the boring flavors, I guess, just like their straight pilsner and their straight pale ale and
your classics.
Yeah, your classics. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, they for what they are, they taste great, and especially those are like kind of the perfect beers for the summer months. So I got no complaints with them, and they taste terrific. But last week I had mentioned a Canadian dessert called the Nanaimo Bar, and I was just thinking, with Paige talking about how cold it is out in Australia now, that this might be something that she can make the warmer up. So what a Nanaimo Bar is, it's like a bunch of different flavors kind of piled on top of each other. So the way you make it is the way I make it is actually just a cold version, where the bottom part is it's like butter and graham crackers, and some people will also incorporate like coconut flakes as well, and you kind of just grind them up till they're nice and like a powder, like a very powdery, and then the butter kind of makes it all stick together. So you just take a square pan and you just kind of, you know, spread it all out. And then the second layer is, it's a custard. It's like a mix of custard and icing sugar. Mm. And you have like a nice thick layer of that. And then on top of that, you just take semi-sweet chocolate, just melt it in a pan, and then just pour it on top. So then you got like that three layers, and so you got like a chocolate like crunch once it freezes. So you just take all that those three layers, stick it in the fridge for an hour, and then you pull it out, and you've got a terrific Canadian treat.
It looks like a slice.
David, I'm going to send my address to you as well. These are all sounding so good.
Why don't we kick off some of the different games that we've been playing? And I know, Paige, I seen a little bit of this game on your Twitter feed. You've been tweeting out some pics, and it looks good. And I know when it first came out, it was actually a game I was interested in getting, and then something was distracting me at the time. I never got it, so I'm interested to hear if this one is worth picking up.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, Spiritfarer is one that I think was pretty well acclaimed. And sometimes you hear people say, oh man, this game's so good, da da da. Like, you're like, like, are you sure? Or like, I think especially with some indie games, like the pricing in Australia can be, you know, like closer to $40, so it can be a bit more whether you want to make that commitment. But a physical edition came out last month, which is in my massive list of, like, July games. Oh, no, actually, I think it got delayed till earlier this month. Yeah, sure. But anyway, physical edition came out recently. And then I told myself I wasn't going to play it till I finished some review games. And then I started it and beat it in 5 days. So say what you will about that.
She demolished it.
So in it, you play as Stella, and you take over Sharon's role as a spiritfarer. So in this world, you drive your boat around and pick up different souls, and you're sort of like managing like a temporary, almost like, I say not a hotel, but you're like, they're staying on the boat until they decide they are ready to move on. So
it's like a waiting room.
Kind of, yeah. Well, there is a guest room, and then they complain, and you've got to build them a house. So it's like 2D, and you know, you're driving your boat to different locations. So it's they describe it as cozy, even on the back of the box. So nothing's too hard. Although I think in the post game, I found another spirit that has like more difficult requests. But the most is there's some minor platforming because you're going around getting resources, crafting, building the buildings they want. It's really beautiful because it's all like 2D animated, and so there'll be scenes where you show up somewhere and you've got to catch lightning in a bottle and things like that, which is really pretty. And there are sort of mini games as well with the resources, so you get a sawmill, so you've got to try and like cut it across the line, things like that. So it's pretty laid back for the most part. So like it says management, like you've got to give them food, and then you've got to deal with how one doesn't like pretty much like, I don't like fruit and I don't like vegetables and I can't have stimulants. Like, feed them what they want.
Here's some water.
Very picky. but for the most part, it's still pretty laid back. Like I said, from like, it's not too hard for anybody. And it actually has co-op, which I had no idea. Like, there's so many games where, like, you feel like they just don't advertise the local co-op, because I would have bought it sooner if I knew you could play it two-player. It's not perfect two-player. Like, the second player plays as a cat, so you're not actually tethered. It just sort of starts zooming out, and then eventually you just don't appear on the screen if you're too far away from each other.
Oh, gosh.
I think the only thing that's annoying about the two-player is when you're doing the... because your boat starts getting really big. You start stacking all these buildings on top of each other. When you go to do one of the activities, like in the sewing room or like the loom room, even if you're both in the room, the camera doesn't zoom all the way in like it normally would in single player. So it's not ideal, but it's still a lot better than some other games with local co-op that I've played. but yeah, I think anyone that's interested in it is actually definitely a good game. It's like, you know, like I said, I hyperfixated on it and like still like just went through it.
The hour count?
I'd say about 20 or so. Like, okay, I don't know if it was under or over. Yeah,
that's a good length.
I'm just going to make a little bit of progress. I'm just going to play a little bit, and that was 5 hours later.
and there goes tonight.
since it does focus on like spirits are moving on, I think it is pretty emotional. Personally, I haven't actually lost that many people close to me, so like I didn't get hit too hard, although I was certainly a bit sad when a couple of my favorites left me. They were ready to move on. But yeah, it's gorgeous, it's good to play, and yeah, I just couldn't put it down, basically.
That's the best, when a game just like gets their hooks in you, and you just, every waking second you have, you just want to play it. That definitely happened with Remake, Final Fantasy VII Remake. It was like, oh, I've got 10 minutes. Yep, I'm going to play some Final Fantasy.
Yeah. For me, the last one like that was 13 Sentinels, and it was more, I start playing at 10, and then I'm like, okay, I'm going to go to bed at midnight tonight. And then I like look down at the watch and like, okay, it's 12:30, but I'm not tired yet, so I'm going to go a little bit longer. And then all of a sudden it's like 2 in the morning, and I have to get up in a few hours. And I'm like, yeah, I think now is the time I should probably go to bed.
But you're like, well maybe just...
Yeah, I'm getting to the point where, like, why am I even going to go to sleep? Well,
yeah,
what's the point
maybe
of
I'll
this
just pull an all-nighter.
I'm just going to finish this. Yeah. Yeah, those games are the best. It's funny, too, like, because there's a lot of good games that are very fun and that I love to play, but they're not necessarily, like, the loose sleep type. Like, there's just certain games that kind of hook you. Yeah. And it's even hard. It's hard to even predict what games are going to do that. Like, I would never have thought 13 Sentinels would have been a game like that for me. So and there was another game that was like that. It was probably one of the Legend of Hero games. The Trails of the Sky second chapter was another one where it's just like, where you just lose, like, time has no meaning anymore. It's just like, you just get lost, you know?
Yeah, that was even with Ease 8. Like, I did the review for the game, but, like, sometimes, right, especially longer games, like, you sort of like, man, I wish this, you're like, come on, like, finish this game so I can get this review out. But that one was just like, yep, I just plowed through that game and was like, wow, this is really great.
Yeah. Paige, did you ever get the, I think it was Super Rare Games that did the physical edition for, when you mentioned local co-op, I think my favorite local co-op game for the Switch is still Lovers in a Dangerous Space Time.
Oh, I haven't played that one, yeah.
Oh, for local co-op, that's terrific.
I'm going to have a quick look at it, because I think if I looked it up once, it reminded me of something. Like, it wouldn't have been, I don't know, I've seen it a little bit. The idea of it reminded me of something else, although I think the gameplay is not entirely the same, where there was, I'm trying to forget if I remember what it was called, like on the Wii, there was like a three-player game where you're controlling a ship and like some sort of platforming, but you control different parts of the ship, and I was, bossy,
oh, I feel like,
is the word,
I feel like I know
think.
What you're talking about.
It was like something explorers.
I feel like I know exactly what you're talking about, but I don't know.
I'll interrupt one, if I think, figure out the name of it.
Okay, I'm pretty sure you can get up to four people at once. And yeah, there's like the ship is controlled by everyone. So there's like, you know, this ship is just this big circle. And then there's like four, I guess there's five, because there's like one person pilots the ship that's in the center. And then there's like weapons at, you know, the four corners of the circle. And you could just keep like jumping, you know, when you're out of range, when your gun is out of range, then you like just jump over to another gun, and some of the weapons are like pretty fun, and it's all like, I think you would enjoy the atmosphere, because it's like baby space rabbits or something. I can't even remember. It's like you're oh, yeah, trying to like go find space rabbits or something. It's a hilarious game.
I found the name of the one I was thinking of, which is Affordable Space Adventures.
Oh, I never heard of that one.
He didn't get very far in it. They didn't want to play with me after getting yelled at a bit, I think.
I was just saying, it sounds familiar. I got to check, like, see some screens or something. I might have played this game.
Looks like it's still only on the Wii U, too. That's interesting. Why isn't it on the Switch yet?
I'm almost positive I played this game. Yeah. Anyway.
All right, Casey, why don't you take a sec? You got a couple of games that aren't Final Fantasy XIV, so I was shocked.
Joke's on you. We're here to... Yeah, so did either of you pick up, or well, pick up, download the WarioWare demo?
Yes.
Did you play it?
No. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I played it. Actually,
amazing,
one thing,
right?
About co-op that's very interesting is that, like, when you do the control, because the characters all have the different controls, and you do the tutorials again. When you're playing two player, the tutorial pops up for both of you, which is really good, because like a lot of games wouldn't do that. You know, just be like, here's the tutorial, like here's the controls for one person, whereas that, it actually splits the screen.
I like that.
It's good.
Yeah, so
good touch.
So anyone who hasn't played a WarioWare game, they're micro games, right? So it's sort of like really,
it's a one-word instruction, and do it in like 5 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. Like, for instance, like the one is like, it's like a Greek, like Greek god statue. Yeah, and his armpits, like, or his arms are up, and you got to like cut his armpit hair.
I like that. We both thought of the first same example.
Yeah, it is a good one. But so essentially, yeah, it's like little things like that where it's like you could just look at it and figure out exactly what you need to do. Like, or it'll have like a quick little like escape, right? And then it's like, oh, you need to just go through like the little maze and like, you know, there's a couple obstacles or whatever in the way. But again, yeah, like they're super, super fast, quick paced, and they're in quick succession as well. So it's like you do one, all right, passed. You do another one, and then as you go further and further, it continues to pick up the speed. They get a little faster, a little more hectic, and you have like an X amount of lives. So normally, like, I guess for me, like when my first WarioWare's were, I guess in the GameCube, and then like the one that really comes to mind too is with like Touch It, right? I believe it was called for the DS. And like a lot of those things, like, oh, okay, like you would have seen that guy's armpit hair and you would have just taken the stylus and either brushed it or flicked it away or whatever. Or like the one, it's like it's the guy's, he's playing the guitar. It's like a big guitar, the entire screen. And you got to like strum in quick succession. So like you would be like, oh, I'm just going to grab the stylus and do that. But in this game instead, like depending on which character you're using, it will dictate how you do the game. Mm. So Wario has like a little jetpack, and he could do his sort of his trademark like side slam, you know? So for instance, in the one where it's like strum the guitar, you know, Wario just like you go up and you sort of just do that back and forth, right? Like left and right, and it'll strum the guitar. But one of the other guys is like 18 volt, I believe his name is, and he actually doesn't move at all, but he could like shoot across the screen. So like what you do is just quickly shoot across the guitar strings, you know?
My favorite's Mona, because she's like on the scooter, so she's constantly moving. But you throw the boomerang, and you can control the where the boomerang goes, and she'll stop while that's being thrown.
Yeah, so, and then, so for that one, right, like, yeah, you just, you'd be able to get the boomerang around, but some of the other ones, one of them is, like, collect, and it gives you four of the pieces, or whatever, and they're, like, just round objects or enemies, whatever it is. It's just collect four or five, it'll tell you, and you would just run into it to get it, and then not grab any more, because if you grab more, then you fail, so... Mm. With her constantly moving, you got to be, like, cognizant, right? Obviously, like, you would just get the boomerang and then just sort of keep it in the corner or something.
Keep, yeah.
But, you know, it is something to think about. So it's cool how it's turned a game you would play only one way into now looking at it from a whole bunch of different characters, all with different movesets.
And, yeah, you have, I think, three characters at a time that it'll swap you between.
Yep, yeah.
So when you load up, like, to start around... Like, yeah, so you won't have to worry about remembering every single character's moves.
Yeah, that would actually be sort of... I wonder if they'll have a mode like that, like random mode.
Maybe.
I bet you they do. But yeah, it's super, super, super fun. I mean, the demo, it's quick and easy to download. I don't think it's a huge, huge download either. But yeah, super fun. And I think if you haven't played it, it's worth giving it a shot. It's like weird, wacky weirdness. Mm.
And it's also a good co-op game, especially because I think this might be the first one where, like, it's two-player and you actually work together. I'm not sure, because I've only played Twisted as a kid.
I'm trying to think. Maybe in, like, Game and Wario, but that's sort of...
Well, that doesn't count.
Yeah, it's sort of different. But yeah, definitely good co-op or couch fun, right? Like, more or less it's a party game, right? Like, it's really easy to pass around, and it's so goofy that you'll laugh at it.
In, like, one of the end, when you finish it, like, trailers, it was showing off there was actually some other game modes it was going to have.
I can't wait. And it actually comes out in, like, soon. We were looking, I think it's September 10th, so it's, like, like two and a half weeks or something.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
Yeah.
But also, I've been playing a little Diablo 2. They had the beta, they had the closed beta and then the open beta this past month. So I got to play on in both of them. And they didn't have all the characters or, you know, like a huge amount of the game. So essentially you had acts 1 and 2. There are 5 acts in total. And like the progression of the game is like you beat the 5 acts in normal. Then you go into nightmare where everything's like way harder. Compared to normal. Then you'd go through the 5 acts again. And then you go into hell. And then you would do the 5 acts again. It's sort of the progression of the game as far as like leveling up and stuff. So this literally had acts 1 and 2 in normal. So pretty limited a little bit. Like I said, you had 5 of the 7 characters. You couldn't play the necromancer or the assassin. So I got in there and messed around. And it feels really good. I mean, it plays exactly like it did back in the day, right? Like so much like literally they're actually the game is... Like, the old game is running underneath the new game at the same exact time. So, there's, like, a toggle button to just, boop, now, like, you're in the old graphics and sounds and everything seamlessly on the fly. Like, you could be in the middle of combat and stuff and just, like, press the button. And it's really, really, surreal and crazy and just sort of, like, mind-blowing. Because it just, like, the new graphics, to me, they're, like... They are looking at them now. Like, I feel like that's what I envisioned when I was playing the game back in the day, you know? Like, they did such a good job of matching the feeling, you know? Like crazy. And just so much, of course, like, you flip to the old graphics and you're like, oh, geez, okay, yeah. Like, I'm playing the 2000 release here. But yeah, it just to have that sort of toggle button on the fly, I thought was really cool. But yeah,
I'm surprised they went that far. To I'm surprised they went that far to put the toggle in. Like, that's pretty rare, I think. Like, a lot of these remaster games are just remastered. They don't have the old graphics.
Yeah, I can think of one of the Halos. I don't know if it was Master Chief Collection or if it was one of the other remakes or something that had a similar feature. And I remember thinking, I mean, I didn't play it, but I watched a video or something of it. And I was like, man, that's super cool because, yeah, just really, you know, you play a remake and, yeah, like, obviously, like, a lot of these games, you're like, wow, this looks so much better, you know, than what it was. But, like, to have the direct flip of the switch, and yeah, like I thought it was interesting that they literally had the like the old game running right underneath, like simultaneously. And it's crazy because it's like you see these beautiful like whatever set pieces here in the or here and around, and then you press the button and you're like, oh, okay, like it's literally in the same spot on the other game, like, and it's like a little poopy sprite thing, you know. It's just super cool. But as far as the gameplay, like I said, it feels really good, like what it was. I didn't, you know, I think I crashed like once or twice. I had trouble like getting into the game, but it was, I think, a my computer problem. I had to like update the drivers and do like a repair or something on the download, and then it worked fine after that. And there are definitely some weird little bugs and things that more so I didn't really experience too much, but from what I've been looking, you know, from people who are really nitty gritty into like the super details of it, you know what I mean? Like there are some weird wonky things. Like for instance, you can set hostile to anyone in a game, right? And then I can just go kill them or fight them at least as far as other players. And they'll be notified like, hey, like, so-and-so is hostile with you now. So, like, you're going to be like, okay, like, I got to watch out for this guy. That or I got to leave this game because it's like, what the hell are you doing, dude? But I guess, like, you could only do it when you were set in town. Because, like, obviously, right? Like, oh, you and me are buddy-buddy. Then all of a sudden I just, like, hostile and try and kill you or something, you know, like, would be not fun for anyone, I don't think. So, like, you'd have to do it in town. But I guess it was, like, bugged out where you could select it like when you weren't in town, but then it would just make you leave the game or something weird, and like not giving the proper like notification to other people that like, hey, so and so is hostile to you. So there definitely seems like there are going to be some bugs and kinks to work out.
Yeah,
and I mean, it sucks because it's totally going to just be like, yep, we'll figure that out as you guys play through it and beta test it for us even more on launch, you know? Because, it, yeah. I mean, the launch is September 23rd, so that's a little under a month from when we're recording this, and it's like, there's no way they're going to have, like, all the time to, you know, actually implement a lot of these bug fixes and stuff before launch, so, and they've already delayed, or not delayed, I should say. They've already announced that the ladder won't start for like a, I don't know if it's weeks or a couple months or something. And the ladder's just like a big, like, oh, you all start at one, they're like seasons more or less. Like, you start here and everyone levels up and like, oh, see who can get the highest, you know, who gets to level 99 first and like whatever. So again, that's not something I've ever really been super into, but there are people who like live and die by the ladders. So they like, I know people are pissed, like, oh, why isn't it coming out right away? And I bet you it's probably because it's like, well, let's work out the kinks before before we start the ladders, you know. But that's a video game development in 2021.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, are you, I can't wait.
Are you staying with PC when it comes out officially, or?
Well, yeah, I already bought it on PC. Like, I'll definitely be playing it here. I am very interested in, like, the other versions, the consoles. Like, now, again, like, looking at some videos from console, like, the console beta, and I guess, like, really not a great matchmaking system where, you know, when I launch it up on the computer here, you can go into a lobby, I could search games, I could join specific games and stuff. I think it's way more limited on console, which that sort of sucks. But what I'd be interested in mostly, if it gets its hooks in me where I'm really, like, getting into, like, doing the grinds and trying to find, you know, like, really good items and stuff, I could see picking it up on Switch, so then that way I can just sort of play it, like, while watching TV or whatever, you know, super passively. So if I do pick up another version, it's likely to be the Switches.
Okay. How much Diablo 3 did you play when it came to Switch? Did you? I know you picked it up, but did you play it much?
I played it. I got a code through NWR. They gave us like 4 codes, I guess, to test online. You know, play with people. I actually played more than I thought I would. I'm pretty sure I went through and beat the game, which, yeah, you know, isn't a super crazy feat, but it's just Diablo is one of those like real good sort of like I'm just gonna turn my brain off and just go blast through stuff, you know, and then maybe I'll find some sweet items while I'm doing it. So like sometimes I get into that mode where it's like that's just what I feel like doing, you know. So I think D3, when it did come to the Switch, and again having it, you know, sort of be able to play as like a more passive in handheld mode, I think I actually did put more into it than I thought. And plus, like, that's like a stupendous freaking port, man. It runs so well. And because like I've always played Diablo's like a click game, like I'm gonna click where I want my character to run to, I'm gonna click on the enemy, you know, a lot of pointing and clicking,
like a
and they
CRPG.
Run. Yeah. So when you play it on console, like you're actually running around, and I was like, man, like it feels, and D3, maybe they put a lot more thought into it when they're making it, but like I was like, this definitely feels like it was like made for like a console. It doesn't feel like a weird, janky like PC to console port with bad controls or anything. And especially when like Diablo is a game, right? You're going through tons of items and stuff and gear, and like what are you trying to find is good. And they had like a really good wheel system for the menus that was awesome. So I imagine they probably have something similar to that in for D2, but I don't know for sure yet.
Yeah, that'd be neat. I know there's lots of like CRPG ports that are on Switch, and you know, some
like
better
the
than
Boulder
others.
Gates and stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's sort of like I can't remember whether people said they did or like they did or didn't have like mod support for those, because like that'd be like the one down thing of playing a CRPG on a console, especially some of those older ones would be not having that stuff.
Yeah, I know for D2, like one of the D2 remake, one of the things they removed was like LAN support, so like people were pissed off about that. Because I guess more so, like, I could make, like, my own modded world and then, like, host it as a server and have people come and play on it, you know? But I don't know. But I know people are upset about that. Because then, right, like, you either got to be single player offline, or if you want to play online, you have to. Or if you want to play with your friends, you have to play through Battle.net.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's not on, like, Steam or anything. Pretty sure you have to purchase it directly from Blizzard, and then yeah, they would be the gatekeeper on mods and stuff, I'd suppose.
Yeah. You'll definitely have to get the Battle.net launcher and stuff. Then you can get your Call of Duties and your World of Warcraft spams.
I'm not sure if you said it just before or not, but I remember when the remake got announced, some people were like, "Quick, save your copy of Diablo 2 in case they do what they did with I think another remaster where they actually kind of took away the original."
Yeah, Warcraft 3, refunded, as the people like to dub it. Yeah, and it's funny because, well, not funny at all, but information with the whole Blizzard, like, being terrible, right? Like, and the whole lawsuit, like, a lot of stuff came out about pretty much how they just, like, punted on Warcraft 3 Remastered, or Reforged, it was dubbed. Pretty much they were like, yeah, we know this is gonna suck, and like they're like, this game, it's a remake of like an RTS, right, real-time strategy game, like it's not gonna make $1 billion, like, and then I guess they like really severely like slashed the budget or whatever, or the scope of the game, and then
I think
they pooped it out.
People are also mad because, like, again, when it comes to, like, games with mod support, especially, like, you know, how many things came out from the original one, then it was like, oh, if you make anything with this, we own the rights to it.
Oh, yeah, because they lost freaking Dota because they're dum-dums. Mm. Somehow they freaking went to court and, like, were like, yeah, you take Dota. Or League, whatever it was, whichever one was the big one that came out of it, but... But yeah, it seems to be like, I know a lot of people were, worried on early on, totally like, oh no, are they just going to like do another Warcraft 3 and like really not care about it? But it seems like the Vicarious Visions, they're the team that you know, did this. Seems like they really put a lot of thought and care into it, like, to preserve, you know, the game and not try and mess it up, but also give some new, you know, nice features, make it look nicer. I mean, I don't want to keep talking about Diablo 2, but they, like, added, like, small things like a shared chest, or stash, I should say, I guess, where, like, in the old game, like, all your characters, like, oh, I found this awesome bow on my barbarian, I want to give it to my Amazon, right? But it's like, the only way I could do that is if I have a friend I can trade it to, and then they can trade it to my other character, or I could, like, join this random game, run to a really random spot inside the game, drop the item, leave, come back real quick on my other character and go pick it up, oh, and, like, hope that the game didn't, like, crash or anything while I was doing it, you know, or got full. But now, like, you have a joint, like, area where you could, like, you know, switch items between characters, so that's like
that's good.
That kind of stuff they've added to, which is nice.
Awesome.
I can't wait.
Well, for my guilty pleasure summer game, I after finishing...
What could it be?
I know, it's... Clearly, it's going to be a Legend of Heroes games. And yeah, so after I finished up 13 Sentinels, I went back and finished Trails in the Sky, the third is the official title.
It's funny because I was looking at the notes and I thought this game was for Paige. And then when she started talking about spirits and stuff, I'm like, man, like, do the Trails games get really weird or something?
Well, you know what's funny? You say that, but this is a really weird Trails game. I don't know what was happening with this one, because it this is the third one they made. So there was Trails in the Sky, first chapter and second chapter, which were based on... It was basically you were following the story of Estelle and Joshua Bright. So that storyline kind of finished up in the second chapter. And then, so for third chapter, it's still the same characters from the first two games, but this time the protagonist, or the lead character, I guess you would say, in this particular game is Kevin Graham, or Father Kevin Graham, who is part of the Dominion. He's the fifth Dominion, and it's basically like the... I guess you could compare them to being like the Catholic Church, I guess, of the Legends of Heroes world. The whole point of of Kevin's job is he's supposed to be going out and finding artifacts from the past civilization, and it's basically magical items that do things. So the church goes around collecting them all so that people aren't doing bad things with them. So the game begins with Kevin going to pick up this cube that was left over from the final battle in the second chapter of Trails in the Sky. So so he goes there and he gets the cube, and he gets sucked into this world called Phantasma. And it's really weird. It's basically like it's all of the different places that were visited in the first two games, but it's like in this parallel dimension. So he's
Twilight
basically
Princess.
Like, yeah. So he's in this parallel dimension where, like, I laughed because I kind of saw it as more of a like, oh well, they get to reuse the assets for the first two games, is basically like the whole world. It's just the old assets, and as he's traveling through the different areas of Phantasma, he picks up these crystals that contain the heroes from the first game, their first two games. So you actually end up like having this huge party of people. I think there's 16 people by the end that join party. Yeah, and they're all you're finding Joshua, you're finding Estelle. You're finding Josette, anyone's there. Oliver, Mueller, Julia, Chloe. Yeah, they're all there. And it's pretty neat. Like it's basically like you pick them up and you make. There's usually a couple people that have to be in the party during certain chapters, because there's seven chapters. So like one chapter will need like a couple people,
yeah,
and then another chapter will need specific people. So you usually like have two people that are there, and then you could you can swap the third and fourth party members whenever you want. So you get a real, and you get most of the characters pretty quickly. So it's, you have a wide range of people to use early on. And it's mostly, like, I would say that I don't know if there's a whole lot of new story, but what it does do is that there's these doors within Phantasma that provide memories of things that happened. It's like lore filling, I would say. So it's like, you know, there's a door for like Shara. So you'll open the door, and then you'll see a memory of hers of like when she was first becoming a Bracer, like before the first two games even began. You know, and or you'll open a door for Estelle, and you'll get to see the interactions between her and Joshua when they first met as kids, like things you didn't see in the previous games, but you might have known that it was a thing that happened, but now you're seeing it play out in these memories. And there's, I'm trying to remember all, there's like 20 something doors, I think, because there's like 15 star doors
with all those characters.
Yeah, and then there's like 5 sun doors and 5 moon doors, I think. And most of the doors have interesting things in them. There's a couple that are just kind of weird. I don't really want to get too much into them, because that's kind of like really where the enjoyment of the game comes in, is like opening the doors and seeing all the different stories and how they play out. Like there's one door where they show like memories of things that happened after the second chapter but before this particular game started. Like you see like between Tita and Nagat, or like how he's getting like with Tita's parents, like trying to kill Nagat because of that and stuff. Like it's just all these weird things. And but I'm like the world of Phantasma is all based on like Kevin and his experience, though. Like, so it's this weird eclectic grouping of all these different stories from all over the place. And I had actually been putting off playing it for a while because I knew it was like this kind of like one-off game, like where it's not really like a story from like, you know, beginning to end. It's kind of this weird mix mash of
little like lore building vignettes almost.
Yeah, and but I mean, I'm happy I played it because it's an excellent game. The combat is great. It's incredible to be able to use all those different characters. Like the final dungeon actually forces you to make 4 teams of 4, so you have to use everybody.
Oh dang!
Gosh, that reminds me, in like the final like boss of Miitopia, where it was like, yeah, you have to split up all your guys, and I was like, oh no, they're all super under equipped and under leveled, and
that's the worst.
Yeah, no, the one good thing though is in the final dungeon it does an excellent job of giving you an opportunity to catch people up if you got behind, because there was a couple people, I think there was like 3 people I never, like, I don't think I used them the entire game. And then, so they're like 30 levels down, and I'm like, ah, crap, I better level these people up and get them gear and orbament and everything. So I would say it took me about 20 minutes, half an hour to power everyone up to equal level. Like, it wasn't that long, 45 minutes at best. Like, I just did a little bit of grinding and then a little bit of purchasing quartz and, you know, a little bit of inventory management and stuff, but by the end it wasn't too bad. And it's funny, so in the final dungeon there's I won't say what happens, but there, so you do, when you do split up the 4 party members, each one of them has like this massive boss at the end. So it's like so you pick like your main party and they do the final battle, but before that you do 3 huge boss battles with the 3 different parties, and man, it's a gauntlet, I tell you.
Oh, they didn't even let you save or anything in between, just bang bang bang.
You have to do the first 3 bang bang bang, and then you can save. And right before the last yeah, they throw you a little bit of a bone. But what happened to me was that so I was able to get through the first 3 pretty easily, and then I got to the final boss, and then I got absolutely wrecked. And I thought, okay, I see what I can do here to prevent from getting wrecked. So I cast Earthwall, because there's this like basically like party wrecking attack that hits you for like the first 20 turns. So it was basically, okay, I'm going to survive these 20 turns
and hope
and
then
fight. And so I was able to do that, but then I got wrecked by, like, when you get them down to about 25%, it changes again, and I just got completely plastered. So I was like, okay, there's no way I can do this. So I had to grind for, it wasn't long, it was maybe 20 minutes, 15 minutes. I added some levels to the main party of the four members. And then I had to do the gauntlet again, and then saved right before the final boss. And then I was able to beat them on the first try at the end. So I was pretty happy about that. But it was another one of those where the things were looking like so bad, and I was like, oh my god, if this doesn't kill the boss, I'm toast. So I was able to do like this one chain move where if the chain was like even a couple hundred damage less, then the boss would have got one more hit and just like totally wiped out my party. So it was one of those,
woo, yeah,
those
you,
epic like woohoo,
you wiped the brow.
Yeah, because there's no way I was gonna survive this, and I would have had to put another, like, the final boss was probably half an hour. Like it was a
marathon.
Work. It was a marathon, but at the end of the day, I loved the game. Glad I got to play it, and opened all the doors, saw all the lore. And I mean, for someone who, if you're not like all, if you're not all in on Legends of Heroes, I don't know if this is really like, this is a game you could probably skip if you're just kind of a casual fan of the series. Because it, like, a lot of the stuff is like really deep looks into stuff, like very detailed on things that some people, like, if you're not like huge into like the peripheral characters histories and stuff, then you're probably going to be like, you know, this is kind of boring, who cares like what Oliver was doing at this time, like, you know, it's one of those things, like, you really have to like love all the characters and really be real deep
and your name has to start
in, like,
with
the,
D
the yeah
and end with Avid.
So it's yeah, so yeah, no, it's so what, and it's funny because it's just a the black sheep, really, I would say. Like, it's just this, you know, the most of the Legend of Heroes games all have like a formula of, you know, how the story begins like in one game, and then usually takes like 2, 3, 4 titles to, you know, really
wrap it up,
get through the whole wrap it up, you know. It's got, but this is kind of just this like this weird one off. So it was interesting to play, and it was a lot of fun. So happy,
nice change
to,
of pace.
Happy you played that one. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'll be. So now that that's done, I've only got one Legend of Heroes game that's been localized that I haven't played yet. So that's Trails to Azure.
Wow.
So that'll be my next
what
game.
What a slacker, bro.
Yeah.
I know. And then I'm going to replay Trails of Cold Steel 4. But
now
after
that,
you've
played
that,
all the
that's
other.
Yeah.
Now that
I've played all the others, so
everything.
Yeah. I'll know every single, like, itty-bitty reference in Trails of Cold Steel 4. I'm looking forward to that, but I still can't believe it's not till like 2023 before a game, like a new localized game that I haven't played yet, is going to be out. It's just, okay. It feels like it's going to be so long.
Yeah,
so,
don't worry.
How
just
long till you have a one-man show talking about the series?
Yeah, just monologuing.
David
about
only
it.
Episode.
Lore master.
Oh, man.
Well, don't worry. We'll get you back on the Final Fantasy 14 with the new expansion coming up. That'll keep
yeah,
you keep it tied in.
Yep. Oh, well.
Call for alcohol this evening. Drink up, drink up, drink up, and order again. This is the last call for alcohol. Get going.
But yeah, this week we got a request for the last call. We went out to the Patreon and asked if there was anything that people wanted to, any topics that they wanted us to do for this week. And the topic that came up was the favorite tavern in an RPG that we've experienced. So I've wrote down a few different ones.
I got a couple too.
Yeah. So Casey, why don't you start us off with one of your favorite taverns in an RPG?
Well, yep, I'm thinking you're leading me off right into this list here, but of course you already probably knew what I'd say anyway. Seventh Heaven, obviously, from Final Fantasy VII. It also makes a little guest appearance in a different form in Final Fantasy XIV as well. But yeah, owned by Tifa, and base of operations for the Avalanche team, and obviously a spot you go to quite frequently in the beginning, especially in the remake, right? Like, you spend, a lot of time there, or at least maybe just felt awesome to see it in, like, like in really fully fleshed out.
The remake was awesome. Like, him having, like, the drink, and then... I figured we wouldn't be back in Seventh Heaven again, so I ended up playing like way more darts than I should have.
Yeah, you're taking it all in.
Yeah, like I bet you I won't be able to play darts again, so I'm just gonna keep on playing here.
Yeah, it's so cool. I mean, I love it. I love it. I mean, I love everything about Final Fantasy VII. So who are we kidding? But definitely one of the more notable establishments, I feel like. And also, awesome request, right? I've been talking to David. I need to stop being a bum. How we got to get the Thirsty Mage bar crawl shirt going, and this I feel like is just like setting it up for a couple of the bars on the shirt.
Yeah, been giving us a few different options for what we could have on there. And I know Paige has been to the next one on our list.
Yeah. Oh, you want me to read it for you?
Yeah, you go ahead.
Okay, well, you wrote The Forgotten Knight, which is the main tavern in Ishgard, which is actually, like, it's, like, two stories, so, like, sometimes I keep going the wrong way to get into it.
the one for the poor people and the one for the rich.
That's where Tataru's sculling beers all day to get inside information, and...
I love her so
much.
She's
our little informant. Personally, I was going to say for Final Fantasy XIV, I prefer the quicksand just in older because of a different Lalafell, Momodi. I think she's probably because that's like all the adventure guilds where you start out, one of the first NPCs you talk to. And one of her first quotes, one of the first things a character in this game says to you, she talks for a bit and then she's like, "Course, I do enjoy hearing a lady muse on the many manhoods of her acquaintance from time to time." And I was like, "Jeez, lady."
Yeah. That's amazing.
I remember that one vividly too, because my daughter was playing as one of the mages. So her Thanalan was where she started. And yeah, we went in there to start the guild, and like the first thing she sees, she sees that, you know, says that to her, and I'm like, okay, my 8-year-old is reading this. Let's jump through this. Come on.
She probably didn't.
And then
know
like
what
the next thing, yeah. Then the next thing I think maybe right before or right after, there's like a drunken guy getting the crap kicked out of him because I can't remember. It's like if he owes money or something to one of the Lalafells or something like that. And Momodi's like, yeah, don't end up like that guy over there. And he's like just getting like thrown across the table or something.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I love the Forgotten Knight because Ishgard, man, I love that area up there. But I always, or one of the earlier ones you run into and just sort of stuck with me too, is the Coffer and Coffin, which, in the Blackbrush, right? And here an infrequented by trade caverns or caravans, its name's deprived from the folk song which tells of an optimistic man bound for Ul'dah. But yeah, that one I always thought was
so
cool.
So many taverns in Final Fantasy XIV, man. Like
it's like real life.
Yeah. A lot of people need a lot of drink. Come on. Hard workers.
Yeah, well, then there's like the whole storyline where you have to make the special wine and like you find the long lost grapevine that was like that they thought had gone extinct, and then you're like taking like these bottles of wine out into like the middle of nowhere tavern. Like, yeah, it's just
so good, man. I love that game, dude.
Yep. one of my favorites is in Witcher 3. It's the tavern owned by Dandelion. So he renamed it the Chameleon, but it was originally the Rosemary and Thyme. And it was funny because it seemed so Dandelion because it was a brothel. And then he ended up converting it into a cabaret / tavern. And it was a fun one to go to too, because when you first get to, I can't even remember the city. Witcher 3 is so long ago to me. I think it was like 2 years ago, but it feels like 10 years ago. But
it was longer. I remember. Unless if you played it again recently, that game came out a long time ago, I feel like, at this point.
I can't. I remember we did a. There was a Thirsty Mage episode for it, but I can't remember if it was 2019 or 2018. But yeah, it was. So you end up going to the city looking for Dandelion, and when you get to his tavern, like he's missing or something, and his business partner's there. And his business partner's just like pissed that the guy's missing and stuff. So it was really memorable in the sense it's like, you know, the guy's like, this whole thing's falling apart because Dandelion's gone. And so like you're going around trying to find Dandelion and then finding like things to help the tavern and stuff. And I think there's like a concert, I think, that happens in there later that there's like one of the singers, like you need her for some quest somewhere or something. And, but Witcher 3 taverns are always fun because I remember, like, I always joke about the first tavern I ended up in. Some guy was, like, lipping me off, and there was, like, there was some kind of, like, prompts to talk to him, and somehow I ended up angering the person and getting into a big fight and ended up, like, killing five people and running away from the bar.
just another night at the old pub with David.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to run into this guy after he's lost a hockey game.
No, yeah, that's right. That's one of the things. Yep. Well, that's it's funny that most of our rinks up here have pubs above them, so it's you finish usually end up finishing a game where after you've like slashed and cross-checked somebody, but then you go up and have a beer with them.
So. Yep, yep. As it's only right to do.
There was one pub that I wanted to ask you about because one of the patrons that actually had mentioned about Lion's Pride Inn in World of Warcraft and how iconic that was, but I wasn't sure if that was one you had heard of, Casey.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that one's in Stormwind, which is the... or am I... Oh, wait, hold on. I'm looking at it now. I'm lying. That's... Oh, okay. I see what's going on. It's the Lion's Pride Inn, also known as Goldshire Inn, which is what... If he had said Goldshire, I would have known. That's where a lot of people go to ERP, I believe. notably, like, I guess it's always been the spot where, like, people just, like, you don't want to go to Goldshire unless you're looking for a good time, you know? And that one's, like, right outside of Stormwind. That's, like, pretty much, as a new character, that's, like, the first area, if you're, like, human character, you know, you'll run into. So, yeah, it's definitely an interesting spot, but as far as World of Warcraft, I was trying to think of different sort of famous, you know, bars, and it's funny, I guess what's interesting to me is with like Final Fantasy 14, I don't know, I just, some of the areas seem more like memorable, maybe it's just more recency, but also like with WoW, I feel like I usually just play to get to the end of the game, you know, so I could go like raid and stuff. So maybe I just don't pay just enough attention. But there is one, and it's part of a dungeon, the Grim Guzzler, which is in Blackrock Depths, which is that's like in the original incarnation of WoW. Like that was BRD was like the nexus for like the end game. Like a lot of stuff went on in that mountain, and there was a bunch of different, you know, dungeons and stuff. And this one, it's like it has to be the biggest dungeon in the game. I'm pretty sure. I'm not going to stand on the hill and die there, but I'm almost positive. Like it's huge, like so many bosses and stuff. And it was often one where you'd be like, oh, we're going to go here and do this run where you only hit like X amount of bosses or do, you know, this kind of path. But, The one, it's just like a bunch of dwarves are all drunk and stuff, and you go in there and they don't attack you until the end. Like, if you hit one of them, then all of a sudden it's like they all come running at you, and you know, it's a spot where like people like mess up all the time, and like, oops, I pulled this guy, and now the whole room's like a bunch of drunk dwarves are coming at us and trying to kill us, and it's like, Jesus. And also for like the brewmaster or the Brewfest is, I think, what it's called. The Brewfest Festival or whatever, which is like a you know, annual thing that goes on for a week or something. And, like, you end up going into the Grim Guzzler and, like, fighting a boss, you know. And so it's something you revisit, you know, every year too. So, but yeah, no, the old Goldshire, some seedy things going down there. Speaking of brothels, you know, sort of similar, I guess.
Oh, man. How about you, Paige? Any other taverns?
Well, either you wrote Stardrop Saloon in Stardew Valley, which is quite a large establishment. Like, you could fit the whole town in there, and then there's back rooms. I definitely like it, but that's because it has my, like, main love interest as the resident alcoholic. And yeah, I think that's the main thing in the Farming Sims is, like, my job as the alcoholic enabler. But get with a man that likes the drinks and just give him some of those. So yeah, you know, that one's pretty good. And it's got the jukebox, so you can mess around with the music, things like that. A couple of mini games I'm not any good at. But one thing that I think is more iconic to me is the blue bar in Harvest Moon, A Wonderful Life. Just because, again, love interest, the bartender, Muffy, was my one. I mean, in the original, there's only, like, three marriage candidates, and she's one of them, the pretty blonde. So, you know, I'd always have to head there to chat her up. And, you know, that one's a bit, I think, a lot smaller, a bit more of a cozy atmosphere. And I think, again, in, like, Harvest Moon DS, it's sort of, like, a weird... It's, like, 100 years later from A Wonderful Life, so it's, like, the same setting. All the characters are sort of, like, their descendants, like, for the same character.
Passed down.
It's weird.
Passed down in generations.
But, and then, yeah, that one of, and so, like, you have the maybe heart events and stuff like that. So, again, one of my love interests in Harvest Moon, like, DSQ is, again, one of the alcoholics where I'd be spending most of my money buying him a wine bottle every day to get him to love me.
Please!
And so, yeah, like, you know, one of the events is, like, us drinking at the bar and then I get so drunk I pass out and he apparently, like, takes me all the way home. So, yeah, definitely, like, bars are a pretty standard place, I think, in those, in most games. And a lot of them are, like they make you feel like you actually want to go there. You actually want to sit there and have a drink. Another one I just thought of, I had to look up what the name of it is because I had no idea. It's, like, in Genshin Impact, in, like, the starting town of, like, Mondstadt. So Dilek's Tavern is called Angel's Share. And I think that, and that's, like, just, it's, yeah, a bit bigger. And yeah, it just looks really nice. Like, I'd really want to go there. And we're talking, and that's owned by Dealer Currens, the winery. And, like, you go to the winery and we're talking about those, like, the grapevines. I'm like, I know, like, in video games, things can't be to scale, but it's just like, oh, you know, it's a bit small for a winery. There's only, like, a handful of different plots of vines because I live somewhere. I mean, it becomes less and less each year, but where I live, it's, you know, my region generates, like, 80% of the table grapes for, like, the country. Like, you know, it used to be, like, now you have to sort of drive out of town to really see them, but it used to be, like, most of the town would have just, like, blocks of grapevines in them, so it's kind of nice to, like, I mean, I don't really need to be reminded of home because I still live in my hometown, but it's nice to, like, go in a game with grapevines and, like, just sit down and be like, ah, home.
Home sweet home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that that inns and taverns are basically just, like, mainstays in RPGs now. It's like it's not even an RPG until you find the local pub. It's a fun thing. Yeah, I guess the last I'll wrap it up with one last one, which is, I think, is probably still my favorite or my most nostalgic, is the Bannered Mare in Skyrim. So this is it's essentially, like, probably the first tavern that you'd probably come across naturally, like, after the whole escape introduction thing. So you're off to Windmere, I think it's called. Man, it's been a while since I played Skyrim 2. Or Windhelm. Damn. Something to do with wind. I can't remember. But basically, like, there's one town that's, like, where you're supposed to go. After you first escape from the dragon attack or whatever. And so when you end up there, there's the tavern, yeah, the Bannered Mare, it's the first one there. And there's a lot of stuff that can happen in it. Like, there's a bunch of quests that are there. One of my, I always love joining the Brotherhood of Assassins, and there's a quest that takes place there. There's someone you have to kill there, so there's that. One of my favorite side quests is there. It's where you have a drinking contest with Sam Glavine, which is hilarious. Like, so he challenges you to, it's not necessarily, I think, always in this particular tavern, but it's one of the locations he could be. And it's the one where I found him in. And so it's like, okay, let's have this drinking contest. So it's like, okay, great. So, like, you know, you're taking one shot, you take two shots. And then on the third shot, you end up passing out. And then you, like, wake up into this weird, weird place, and you find, and you're basically, like, the whole quest is, like, backtracking all the weird stuff that you did.
Like, it was, like, the hangover the quest.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, yeah. Before, I'm sure that Skyrim must have came out before the hangover, but.
When did.
Yeah, it was basically the same thing.
Actually, I don't know.
Or it would have been close, actually.
Yeah, the hangover so, I guess, what? Is 2009.
Oh, no, then that would have been Skyrim's
2011.
That would have been before then. 2011, that's right. Okay. Well, there you go. Maybe they added that in
I
after they saw that movie.
It could have been a nod, right? And then I know Hangover 2 maybe. Probably came out in pretty quick afterwards, probably by 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe they're big fans.
No, it makes sense. Yeah. But yeah, that's always the town that I gravitate this towards too, because you can buy the house there too, like the Breeze home. So that's like where a lot of people probably live, like, three doors down from that tavern or whatever. So I think, at the end of the day, it's probably an easy answer because Bannered Mare is so well-known in Skyrim, so well-known. But
it's well-known, you know, for
sometimes the most obvious is the... Yes, right. Sometimes
and
the most
you can
obvious
look forward
always...
to going to it again in the anniversary edition.
Well, I was going to say, if I'm not promising anything here, I've never played Skyrim outside of, like, a half hour. Maybe it's the time.
It's on PS5. It's on PS5. I'm sure. I'm assuming. I think
that,
so.
Oh, I thought that was like an announcement of like, hey, it's going to come eventually.
Yeah, the anniversary edition is the next gen one.
Did it? Yeah.
It's
add fishing. Okay. 11/11, November 11th.
Oh, I didn't know it was that far away.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's good because I was going to go check on my Xbox to see, because I'm assuming it's part of Game Pass, the anniversary edition.
I would imagine.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to end up playing it again, that version, if they're going to have like an upgraded HD
version. You're going to get those 500 Creation Club items where I joked that it's going to be 500 different chairs.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's... I don't know how far I'll get in it, but I'm definitely going to play a bit because it'll be fun to play that.
You'll have to just schedule him like for 6 months after it comes out for an episode so that he has time to.
Well, it's funny because I play, like I said, I remember it being so wild. I had a quest. It was like, yo, there's this person in this cave. They're like, they're bad. Go kill them. And then like I went to kill them and they're like, actually, that person's the douche. We should kill him. And I was like, and then you get to decide. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I went, and then there was like I did like a triple backstab. I don't even know what was going on. And I was like, wow.
I know what one you're talking about, too.
I was like, I can't believe like there's so many options I could have done there. That was really cool. And then I never played it again.
Yeah, I know which one you talked about there.
It's fun.
Yeah, and that's, the game is full of that stuff. It's great.
I know, that's why it's like I really, really liked it. I thought that was so cool, and then for whatever reason, I just never ended up playing again. One day.
That's the brother, the first mission of the Brotherhood is like...
I think it was a girl in a cave, right?
The one that you're talking about was, yeah. It was like there was like a spy from another country or something. And they're like, oh, you should go kill. She's hiding in this cave, go kill her. But then when you get there and you talk to her, you find out, like, the guy who sent you is actually a bad guy, too. And you can, yeah, so you can end up helping her kill that guy.
I
think
I did that.
Or you can actually.
But then I killed her when we got back to town.
Yeah, because you could trick her back into town.
Yeah, I was like, let's go do this thing, girl. And I was like.
Yeah. Yeah, I think like you get to the town and then she realizes like she's getting double crossed by you, like triple crossed or whatever. Yeah, it's great, but yeah, the assassin one is great too because it's like when you wake up, there's like three people and the girl's like you have to pick one to kill and so you go talk to each three of them and they're all like, you know, jerks or whatever, and so you're just like, all right, I just kill this guy,
screw it,
and then yeah. And then you find out like there is no right answer. It doesn't matter. All you have to do is just kill one. It doesn't even matter. But apparently they just found out there's like some. Apparently there is like an answer that was expected or something. That's like found in like some small like offset line somewhere else in the game or something. I saw an article about it just like a few weeks ago that like 10 years later they finally discovered, you know, what the answer they were expecting to be done or something. So it's crazy that like 10 years have gone by and there's still like secrets that are being found in this game. So it's gonna be
and
fun.
New bugs too.
Yeah,
that's like bees.
Yeah. If my dragons aren't flying backwards when I boot up my Series X, I'll be disappointed. All right. Well, I think it's probably a good time to wrap things up. So, Paige, is there any reviews that you have left? You must still have a...
Some of the ones I talked about a month ago, left. Yeah. That's so my Samurai Warriors 5 review should be out by then. Normally I do review in one go, but it's sort of taken me like day before I wrote it, yesterday I recorded it, and now like today I'm leaving the editing. So at least that one will be itself. Out.
Hmm? Well, I just say it's a marathon itself. It's like. Yeah. It's like finishing Trails in the Sky the Third. four stages of completion.
Yep.
And how about you, Casey? What's on the docket for you these days?
Just chugging along. We're starting Stormblood soon, so there's that.
Yep. Wrapping up.
The post. I thought I was getting close, and of course you're never that close. But I know for certain I have like one more dungeon to do, and then that's kaputs. So. And then, yeah.
Then Ishgard's in the rearview mirror.
Well, I'm sure we'll be revisiting as Final Fantasy likes to do. But yeah, and then, of course, Talk Nintendo podcast every week. We get that going. New episode be coming out. It comes out every Thursday. So we haven't missed one yet. I feel like I say this probably every podcast, but we also have our Metroid crossover coming up, and way sooner than we're going to probably realize, right? We're aiming for like.
I'm gonna have to start that soon.
Yeah, a good thing is that I think it's only like 8 to 10 hours, give or take. So, you know, not too bad. But I believe that we were aiming right. I don't think we set a date, but we were aiming for September.
End of September, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. I think it's end of September or near the end.
Yeah, so we'll have to get working on that.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, for us, we got the next week will be the 13 Sentinels episode. And then we'll have the crossover in a few weeks, so we have those to look forward to. And like I said, we'll be setting up a poll on Patreon to set up the September episode of All Bed Time. So make sure to register there and get set up if you want to be part of making the choice for that episode. But other than that, I guess we'll see everyone out next week. And thanks to everyone for listening to the Thirsty Mage. Bye.
Bye.
Adios. Bye.